On to round two, Lakers Thunder coming up. We got a lot to talk about on today's show. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. We're going to talk a little bit about the Lakers Rockets series. We were hoping that on today's show we would get to talk about the Lakers emerging victorious against Houston, and that's exactly what happened. Plus, we're going to get into the next series coming up against OKC. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Guys, we got what we wanted. We said on our last show last week that we were hoping that on today's show we'd be getting to preview Lakers Thunder, and here we are.
It's good to see you guys. Yeah, we got what we wanted. We'll see if we still feel that way here in a couple days.
That show feels like a lifetime ago. I've watched so much basketball since then. I rewatched the entire season series, watched obviously all the game sevens, and it was just, yeah, it was a weekend full of just on the couch watching nothing but film. And that feels like it was a week ago.
It really does, especially just there's so much that's happened around the entire league. Here we are, and we could talk about this. I guess let's just start with the Lakers series against the Rockets, finishing things out. A dominant Game 6 performance. The Lakers did everything I hoped they would do. They had the role players step up. Rui had a big game. DeAndre Ayton had a big game. LeBron James was playing with force, did everything they needed to do to close it out. It looked like the Lakers were the team that really wanted to put an end to this year. It was the performance I was hoping to see in Game 5 is ultimately what we saw in Game 6. Jason, what did you take from that Lakers-Rockets Game 6 and maybe the series in its entirety?
I thought it was their best performance of the entire round in the sense that like they kind of put together all of their best performances from specific games, whether it was like the defense from Game 1 combined with the LeBron on-ball scoring that we saw more of in Game 2 with like, you know, Austin obviously was a different wrinkle, but we saw in general just like a level of focus and intensity that we saw from the first two games of the series kind of return back into the equation. I remember when we talked about it, when I did my live show after Game 5, I was like a little spooked, like, this isn't good. They look like they might be the better team. And then I rewatched the game and we talked about it on this show on Friday. Or Thursday, I think it was. But I was like, I just didn't think we played very well. Like I thought Marcus played poorly. I thought Austin played poorly. I thought LeBron played poorly. I thought they all missed a lot of shots they normally make, a lot of sloppy turnovers they don't normally have. Like I just thought it would be really difficult for the Rockets to get two additional games like that where they would play poorly. And that to me, I thought was like really the story of Game 6. It was like the return of role player Marcus making all these like little plays that help contribute to winning while limiting mistakes. His only turnover was that one where he tried to go for that semi-transition drive on Amen Thompson and kind of shoveled the ball out of bounds on accident. But he had that huge block on the rim at the rim on Tari Eason that I thought was a big play. I thought his timing and help defense taking charges was one of the key sequences or key kind of factors in that game. And one of the key sequences was when Austin had that turnover at half court when they had cut the lead to 15. And Şengün goes down and looks like he's going to get an and one, and Marcus takes another charge and shuts that off. I thought Marcus was awesome. Austin, one of the things we talked about in Game 5 was like he was getting to the rim, but he was struggling to make layups, which was kind of unusual. He had that run at the end of the third quarter where he really got going, attacking Şengün in pick and roll, scored against the drop, scored against the switch, like just was really effective. And then LeBron, it reminded me a lot of like Game 6 against the Warriors back in 2023. If you guys remember, where LeBron just came out and there was an intensity and a focus from the very beginning of the game that was like, we're ending this thing tonight. And that I thought really trickled down to the rest of the team. You guys have all seen that clip going around this morning of him saying like, I'm effing locked in, which was from Game 3. But everyone was looking at that as like him almost like calling his shot for the game winner. I viewed it very different. He's getting on a teammate on the bench, and it seemed like it was like, hey, I need you to lock in too. I need you to meet me at this level. And like, I think that when it comes to being a leader, that really is the thing that I think gets underrated when you're talking about leadership and how different it can look among different types of players. The main thing is you need a guy that looks at all your teammates and goes, this is the expectation, meet me at this level, and we're going to get through to the finish line. And I just thought LeBron was a unbelievable tone setter in that game, as JJ Redick said after the game. So it was, everything came together. We talked about how Rui, his best value is knocking down wide open threes. Well, the Lakers offense generated him a bunch of wide open threes, and he nailed every single one of them. And it just was, it was just a complete performance that tied together all the best things about the series. They won the possession battle in both the turnovers and the offensive glass. So even the things they really struggled with, they confronted and conquered. And I think they kind of resoundingly stated, we are the better team, not the Houston Rockets, which was very different than how we felt after game five. I don't know how you could feel any more satisfied with the series conclusion than that win in game six.
Yeah, especially after everything the Rockets were saying about them. You know, we think we're the better team and that they were going to game seven and all that. For the Lakers to show up the way they did in game six, incredible defensive performance. The stat was bouncing around on social media, but the Orlando Magic missed 23 straight shots that night. An absolute abomination, an affront to the basketball gods that they were punished for in game seven. And yet the Orlando Magic that night scored more points than the Houston Rockets did. Such was the state of the Lakers defense, the Houston shooting woes, and LA's determination to put an end to that series. Jovan, give us your thoughts before we look ahead to the series against OKC.
To that point, they held the Rockets to 78 points, which was 13 fewer than their season low. So like that, and just think about the Houston offense was like not really enjoyable for most of the series, I would say, just as an objective basketball observer. And to see that the Lakers held them to 13 points fewer than their season low, like that there had been some low lights for Houston offensively throughout the season. And like, this was you know, the worst of it. So I thought that was impressive in and of itself. But I mean, I echo everything that Jason said. I thought there had been some of the narrative stuff out there in terms of, well, KD's been out, right? And the Rockets had this epic collapse. They blew game three. Like, you know, if they didn't blow that, maybe the Rockets would be up right now. They'd be the team up 3-2 going into game six. And like, maybe they'd be winning the series. And I think there'd been a lot of more focus on like Houston's shortcomings or struggles, or how Houston really was the better team and the Lakers were overachieving. And I thought they put that entirely to rest in game six. And they made it clear that like that to me was far more convincing than even Houston's game four. It was like, this was the best punch that either team threw in the series. And the Lakers' best was clearly better than Houston's best throughout the series. But like, that was the definitive statement win of when we really lock in and we have it. And they didn't even have, it wasn't like they had a 2-day rest going into this game, right? It was coming off of, they had started to look fatigued in game three. They were definitely shot in game four. And then even in game five, they tried to conjure it and they couldn't quite get there. But it was like game six was from the jump. They got down 16-11 from that point on. They went on a 27-3 run and they just completely flipped the game. That middle first into middle second portion. We've seen them have a couple runs like that this season. I think about that Phoenix run that they had in Phoenix. Remember, I think it was like middle of the third into middle of the fourth. Vando was a big part of it. Jake was a big part of it. So it was like the bench guys generating turnovers, and they have shown they can go on these like crazy runs at times. And they had one of those from the middle of the first to the middle of the second. And so, DA, what was huge in this game, his one-on-one defense against Şengün, they started helping less. Rui, what was awesome, made so many big shots. And it just, you know, Austin started to get going in the third. LeBron was the best player on the floor, controlled the entire game. Like, it was everything you wanted to see going into the next round.
Yeah, exactly. DA was, as soon as the Rockets shifted their strategy from attacking the offensive glass the way they did, DA saw the advantage and just crushed them on the glass all game long. Did that in game five as well. Did that in game six. He was fantastic. So happy with what we saw out of DeAndre Ayton from a defensive perspective. That was one of those games where you look at the box score, you go, oh, big rebounding total, but so night. It was an awesome performance from him on both sides of the basketball. Really, though, defensively, the rebounding, the shot blocking, ironically, he was kind of like a souped up rich man's version of Clint Capella the way he played that game. And it was awesome to see that from DA. Rui Hachimura was just absolutely punishing the Rockets. Anytime they gave him a little bit of space, he was knocking down shots. So that was great to see as well. Just a great way to cap off the series. The Lakers proved definitively they were the better team. They are the better team. And now we move on to the series against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Before we get to that, let's give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is PrizePicks. You guys can check out Prize Picks. Use the link in the description down below. The code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly. We're at Prize Picks, guys. Let's see if there's anything interesting here. The first thing that catches my eye is he's a blur. Tyrese Maxey, 19 and a half points against New York tonight. I have a good feeling about that.
He averaged 30 against the Sixers in the regular season on over 50% from the field and over 50% from three. So I like that one too. And then Gobert is going to guard Castle at some point. We'll see if he starts the series there. That's the one big thing is, like, I think we'll end there with Julius Randle on Wemby and Gobert on Castle. But I wonder if they'll start Gobert on Wemby. So that obviously would limit Steph's three-point attempt. So maybe not that one. Do you think the Knicks will double Embiid most likely with Kat on the floor? So that's one that we could look at, assists.
You want to go Kat assists?
No, Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid is. Oh, gotcha. Joel Embiid, 5.5 assists.
I'm assuming the little red horned guy means extra odds.
Yeah. So we'd offset, I think, the Maxey. Now we do need a third player that's from a different team. So we have 2 76ers at this point.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So what if we look at. I mean, this is De'Aaron Fox, 14.5 points.
Yeah, I like Fox for 14.5. He scored well against Jaden McDaniels in the regular season.
Okay, so let's go there. $10 entry fee would win you $32.50. If you guys want to check it out, use that code HMA. Link is in the description down below. Go check out Prize Picks. We appreciate them for sponsoring the show. All right, guys, let's talk a little bit about this series against OKC. We're going to start with the offensive side of the ball. Jason, started with you last time. Let's go Jovan here. What are you looking for from the Lakers offense against, and I'm kind of chuckling because we're literally talking about the best defense in the NBA that the Lakers offense now has to run against.
Yeah, so I did a series preview last night on my show and went through the season series numbers, the regular season numbers, and the playoff numbers. And my big Lakers question, and it didn't have to be on any, you know, either particular side of the ball. My big Lakers question going to this is, can the Lakers score against this defense? And that sounds kind of negative, but the Lakers had a 95 offensive rating against the Thunder over the four games. Now, they punted one of the games. They rested, Luka and Austin were out. They rested LeBron. Okay, you put that one to the side. Does not get much better in the, it actually gets worse. That their offensive rating got better, factoring in that last game. Their offensive rating in with Luka on the floor against the Thunder this season was a 90. Just think about that. Like, think about how low that is. So the Lakers, if you look at, the Thunder killed them on both sides of the ball. Lakers turnover rate worse than the league, and a couple games with 20 plus turnovers, they got slaughtered. So I don't want to entirely flush the regular season series out, but I mean, you do put that to the side. There is theoretically going to be no Luka, at least for the first few games of the series. So I think if you want to find some optimism, you go to that game in LA, February 9th, right after the trade deadline. No Luka, but no Shea and AJ Mitchell on the OKC side. They are going to be starting, right? Like, obviously Shea, but then AJ Mitchell's replacing Jalen Williams, who's also out. So those are maybe their two best scorers available right now that were not available for that game. So I do think that makes a big difference on the OKC side offensively. But that game, the Lakers had a lot of success in the middle portion of the game, second quarter and third quarter. OKC got out to a lead. Then LA won the second quarter, actually took a double-digit lead or around there in the third quarter, and then OKC eventually rallied and ended up winning the game by 9. But the big point of entry for LA's offense was playing through the post with LeBron, and I think there was a lot we could take from that matchup that we saw in the Houston series. And so when I think about LA's success in this series, I think there are going to be two entry points. And I think one I have confidence in, one I have less confidence in. So the primary entry point is going to be LeBron in the post, similar to the Houston series, where they're going to try to get mismatches for LeBron. I think we'll see different screening actions, maybe off the ball to draw a switch and then get LeBron in the post, or maybe some sort of pick and roll on the side with whoever's the defender that the Lakers want to pick on. You get LeBron and let's just say Marcus, because he'll probably be the guy that they hide the non-defenders on or the worst defender on. Try to get LeBron in the post against Marcus's defender, and like that's the way you enter. The other one's going to be the pick and roll with Austin and Marcus. My fear in that is the Lakers pick and roll offense was awful against the Thunder, and the Thunder were able to blitz and hedge and cause a lot of live ball turnovers. Austin, I mean, go back to that April 2nd game, 3 turnovers in the first 3 minutes of the game. Austin had 4+ turnovers in all 3 games against OKC, had 5 turnovers in 2 of them. And so like Austin handling the ball against OKC's perimeter defense is a bit concerning for me. Like this is the biggest test for him. This is a group that he has struggled against. So I think those are going to be like the two base entry points into OKC's defense. There is not a great entry point really into OKC's defense outside of their post. So we'll see how, I think that's how LA is going to kind of approach it. It's just, can you take care of the ball enough at a high enough level? For what it's worth, the Thunder are the best team in the league at forcing turnovers. The Lakers right now in the playoffs are by far the worst team at turning the ball over. So that's where like JJ said it yesterday at practice, Houston's best defense is OKC's baseline defense. And that's my concern here is like the Lakers struggled even with a team that was playing Alperen Şengün, Reed Shepard at taking care of the ball. There's no Alperen Şengün or Reed Shepard in this matchup. Like that they're playing against a team with multiple all defense candidates. It's going to be an entirely different beast. So how LA can, I mean, JJ even said it yesterday. He's like, our goal is like to actually just get shots up. Like we were not able to get shots up against OKC in the regular season. So can they not turn the ball over? Can they actually get shots up and can they play through the post? I think those are like my big opening questions for LA.
JJ also said the Thunder do not foul, which I thought was
pretty, that was just some gamesmanship.
It was well done by JJ Redick. Look, the Thunder, they are the number one team in the NBA when it comes to forcing turnovers. They subscribe to the motto, foul the hell out of everyone. The referees will not call them all. And we've seen a number of teams that have now taken that style and used it to great effect. And the Lakers really struggle with that type of perimeter pressure that the Thunder can put on. So, you know, going into the last series, we talked a lot about the offensive glass and can the Lakers keep the Rockets off the offensive glass. Ultimately, the Rockets shifted their strategy as we got into the series to go away from crashing the offensive glass so much to instead getting back defensively and trying to force turnovers on the Lakers, which for a few games there, the Lakers did oblige and turn the ball over a ton. This series, it's all going to be about the turnovers. Can the Lakers hang on to the basketball or not? And this is where the unforced turnovers, the little mistakes, will really become absolute killers. You can't have the, you know, you're on a dribble drive and you bounce the ball off your foot and it rolls out of bounds. It's the unforced ones that are really going to be a problem because OKC is going to turn you over enough on their own. You can't gift this team anything. Your margin for error is just very, very slim. That's how good this Thunder defense is. So operating offensively is going to be a challenge for the Lakers. I do agree about throwing the ball into LeBron. The Thunder do give up a lot of threes. That's the one thing that they don't take away. So getting the ball into LeBron in the post and then allowing him to do the little peek over the shoulder, survey the floor, find open shooters, that probably is going to be a path to success, but the Thunder are going to do what they do, and they're going to shoot passing lanes and try to pick those off as well. So that'll be an interesting battle. Stylistically, the teams that tend to beat the Thunder do two things that the Lakers have not been particularly great at. That's shoot a high percentage and a high volume from three and really crush on the offensive glass. Now, the Lakers did a much better job in the last couple of games against Houston on the offensive glass, but can they continue to do that against OKC? And then OKC funnels three-point shots. Can the Lakers get their three-point volume up at a highly efficient level in order to actually take advantage of that? Because they do like to pack the paint and don't want to let you get those paint touches. So stylistically, it's going to require the great adaptability from the Lakers going into this series. They've been a team that has been very adaptable into the playoffs, losing Luka, losing Austin, coming out on the floor, the adjustments the coaching staff made. I give them a lot of credit. They're going to have to be even more malleable in this series and turn themselves into a different team than really what they've been so far in terms of the types of shots they're hunting. So going to be really interesting to see if the Lakers can make those kinds of adjustments and take advantage of what the Thunder defense does give up, which is not a lot. Jason, let me get your thoughts on offensively. What do you expect to see out of the Lakers this series?
The half-court stuff, I think you guys have mostly hit. The post-up stuff was huge. I counted 9 made baskets that came directly off LeBron post-ups in the game in LA that Jovan is mentioning. That's a pretty reliable source there. LeBron in the postseason so far, only Joel Embiid has generated more points out of post-ups than LeBron has. LeBron is pretty good lead on the rest of the field, and obviously Joel Embiid is a whole different animal there. I think that there was an intentionality with each possession that we saw in game six that I think is really translatable here, in the sense that the Lakers took care of the basketball, they got the ball up into the half court, and they ran the best possible set that they could to attack Houston with the personnel they had on the floor over and over and over and over again, which is a big part of how they won that game as convincingly as they did. They got to their LeBron post-ups. They got to those LeBron horns pick and rolls where he starts at the elbow. They got to the Austin Reeves switch onto Reed Shepard into the ball screen without Brunchingo, and they were super, super intentional, and I think that's going to be the key. The only thing I'd really add to what Jovan said is, in the Austin ball screens, when they went to double drag, I noticed they had a little bit more success, just simply because if you had a guard-guard switch that takes place as Austin is trying to get downhill, it allowed him to get a little bit more separation, and he was able to find Jackson quite a bit when that happened. It just kind of changed the way that OKC was guarding a little bit more than just a static kind of ball screen. I also did like Austin's ISOs. Like, when he like got into his bag in the mid-range, he was actually able to score one-on-one a little bit against Lou Dort and against Alex Caruso and against Aaron Wiggins. So, like, I think, like, to J.J. Redick's point, getting a shot up on the glass is the most important thing, because at the very least, you have a chance for it to go in and a chance to get an offensive rebound and a chance to set your defense compared to a turnover. On the turnovers, I ended up going back and watching every single turnover they had when there wasn't garbage time. So erase the after the Luka hamstring through that entire last game, basically. And there were a couple of repeat style of turnovers, like the one-on-one ball handling errors. Austin had six where he either dribbled the basketball off his foot or lost control of it one-on-one, got picked, something like that. Or like tried to split a double team and got picked. So Austin's like just ball handling in general, I think is going to be a key kind of like swing factor of this series. The passing to the, into the pocket was another area where Austin had turnover issues. From there, it's just like little things here or there. Like, to your point about mental errors, Trevor, like there's going to be a certain amount of turnovers that are going to happen just because OKC is really good at what they do. Like, J-Dub has ridiculous arms, and I do think he'll play at some point in the series. And both LeBron and Austin will get picked by J-Dub at some point. It's just, it's going to happen, like, it because of how good he is at what he does. So, like, the ones that you really have to avoid are, like, the stupid mental mistakes. Bad transition kick-aheads. They had three of those during the regular season matchups. Throwing the ball to a covered cutter. Like, you just get lazy and tired, and so you rifle a pass to where you think Vando's open in the dunker spot, but he's really not. And, like, it gets picked. Like, that sort of thing. Role players. We had six turnovers this year in the meat and potatoes of these games where Laravia or Vando or Jackson like tried to dribble. And it's like, don't like if you rack a closeout, take that one dribble, two dribbles, and then make that next pass. Don't try to go into your spin move behind the back, kind of complex ball handling in traffic against this team. You're going to get picked. Ayton has to be able to catch the ball in traffic. That was a huge issue in the game where Luka pulled his hamstring, just not being able to catch. Like, not every pass is going to be right in the breadbasket. You got to be paying attention and have your hands ready. So, like, there's just a lot of, like, basic mental error type stuff that I think if they clean up, like, I counted before Luka's hamstring injury 47 turnovers, not counting the rest of that game and all of the fourth game. Like, that's going to be 30 no matter what over a three-game span, right? Like, at least. But if you can limit it, keep it in that, you know, 11, 14, 13 turnover range, you have a shot. You have a shot to keep the game close. And if the game is close late, then maybe you can pull it away with some late game shot making. But I just don't think that there's any shot if they fail that initial test. That's the initial test against OKC. You got to get the ball to the floor without turning it over.
The Thunder, the number one team in the NBA, or tied, I believe, for number one team in the NBA in forcing turnovers, and also number one for not turning the ball over themselves, for taking care of the basketball. They enjoy a big discrepancy there. You've got to cut that down a little bit if you're going to be able to stay in these games. We need to talk about the Lakers' defense against OKC, and we're going to get to that right after this. We'll be back in 1 minute. Don't go anywhere.
All right, quick break. And this one's actually something I've been using personally. Cold days, big games, busy schedule, no time to cook. That's why I've been rocking with Factor. I've been ordering their Protein Plus meals, especially the grilled chicken with roasted veggies. Perfect for me because I'm trying to keep my energy high for shows without feeling heavy after eating. What I like about Factor, quality ingredients, lean proteins, real veggies, whole food fats, no refined sugars, no artificial sweeteners, no refined seed oils, and it fits the schedule. They've got 100 rotating meals weekly, keto, calorie smart, Mediterranean, GLP-1 support, even a new Muscle Pro collection for strength and recovery. And the convenience is crazy. Always fresh, never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes, no prep, no stress. I use this, and you guys should too, especially if you're balancing work, school, gym, and Lakers games every night. Head to factormeals.com/LakersPod50off and use code LakersPod50off to get your 50% off your first box plus free breakfast for a year. That's 50% off and a free breakfast item in every box for a year while your subscription is still active.
All right,
big thank you. That was a little weird to watch.
That was a step back in time there. Do you miss it? Do you look at that and go, oh, no, I missed that?
I don't miss it at all. I waited way too long. But it's funny, every once in a while I'll walk around my house and I'll find like a hair tie laying around, and I get like, I'm like, oh God, remember that? That was a weird era.
We're living in a different world than we were just a few weeks ago. Jason, let's start with you. Defense against OKC. What do the Lakers need to do to try to slow down this OKC offense?
So I think I want to divide it into like kind of two phases, in the sense that their man-to-man looks are going to struggle because they just don't have anybody that can stop Shea from getting dribble penetration. I think that when you look at OKC's jump shooting, there's kind of a fascinating differential between their jump shooting when they're contested versus when they're open, where I do think there's a certain amount of like, hey, if we up just the overall intensity of our closeouts and we kind of make the Thunder shoot more under duress, that could lead to some like shooting variance that works in their favor. Because like, so for example, during the regular season, when the Thunder were unguarded in catch and shoots, they shot 42%. When they were guarded in catch and shoots, they shot 32%. That went from being one of the best teams in the league for unguarded three-point shooting to one of the worst teams in the league in guarded three-point shooting. So they do have a little bit of a tendency to struggle to knock down shots against more intense closeouts. So just the Lakers being really sharp in rotation goes a long way. One of the weird kind of subplots of this season series was, it's really easy to just be like, oh, the Lakers got their butts kicked every time they played. And that is true. And for the record, like, I think the Thunder are going to win the series. I'm sure we'll have picks later. But there were two weird factors. One, they turned the ball over a ton in those two blowouts to start. Like, right out the gates, they came out turning the ball over. And two, OKC this season on catch and shoot threes against the Lakers shot 45%. They shot insanely well in this season series off the catch. You guys all remember
Lou Dort shot 50% on threes like that. He hit that one, the most recent game in OKC, he hit four threes in the first quarter. So that just tells you all you need to know.
Yeah. The game where Luka hurt his hamstring, the Thunder shot outrageously well in that first quarter. Like, we talked about after the game, like, man, like, if they didn't turn the ball over so much, like, they might have been able to weather that hot shooting and be relatively within striking distance and try to make that a game. It's just you can't like suffer the hot shooting barrage and have all the turnovers and how that can kind of compromise you. So like, I do think there's a certain amount of like, Shea's gonna get into the lane. So is AJ Mitchell, so is J Dub. The kickouts are gonna be there. So you've gotta be really sharp in your rotations. Planning for dribble penetration would be key, funneling in a certain direction so that you know what rotations are coming next so that guys can be a little bit ahead of it. But the bottom line is, I think they're going to struggle in their man-to-man looks. I think even defensive rebounding, Ayton got his butt kicked by Isaiah Hartenstein on the offensive glass. That's a key kind of like battle that I think it needs to be reversed. The one kind of like silver lining I found was just the zone looks worked pretty well. They ran 30 possessions of zone versus the Thunder in the regular season, held them 24 points, which is 0.8 points per possession. Small sample, but that is one of those things that can kind of cause some break rhythm three-point shots for them. So I think mixing in a lot of zone emphasizing the direction you give up dribble penetration so that you can plan for rotations and then chasing guys off the three-point line at least as best as you can is your best pathway here. But this is the end of the floor I'm arguably more concerned about.
I think a lot of it's going to be the mental side of things because the Thunder, they are going to score. They're going to get buckets on you. They're going to have opportunities. They're one of the best teams scoring, not just getting into transition, but efficiency in transition. They're one of the best teams in the NBA. The only region of the floor that they're not top 10 in field goal percentage is the corner three, if I'm remembering correctly. This is a team that is extremely efficient with the way they run their offense, with the shots that they take, the shots that they make. And the one concern I've got for the Lakers is from the mental side of things. We've seen this team get down a little bit, and this is not unique to the Lakers at all, but particularly if they're not seeing the ball go in the basket on their own end and they're getting scored on at the other end, that's where you can see the Lakers mentally start to switch off, start to make mistakes. It's going to be very important that they stick in these games mentally. The Thunder are going to go on runs. They're going to go on offensive runs. They're also going to go on defensive runs where they're going to get five or six stops in a row, maybe more. They might get a few turnovers in a row. The Lakers have got to play through, Jason, you mentioned weathering the storm. They've got to be ready for that kind of adversity and to play through it. They may not be able to battle back from some of these things, that the runs that the Thunder are going to have, but maybe they do. But they have to give themselves a shot, and that means staying focused mentally, staying on top of everything they need to do on each and every possession. Again, much easier said than done, but you switch off at all mentally against this Thunder team, they will, number one, they will recognize it. Not every team will recognize it. They will recognize any mistakes, any mental errors that you make. But number two, they will capitalize on it each and every single time. So the Lakers have got to be very diligent from the mental side of things on the defensive side of the ball. They've got to make sure that they stay locked in, stay focused. LeBron, we talked about it to kick off the show when he was saying, I'm locked in, asking everybody to meet him at that level. Well, guess what? Against OKC, you're going to have to be at that level for an entire 48 minutes. It's a real challenge, but I'm excited to see if the Lakers can step up to that. Jovan, your thoughts on the Lakers defense against this Thunder offense?
So the Thunder have made a bit of a shift in their offensive approach in the playoffs. So right now they have a 127 offensive rating, which is the number one offense in the playoffs. They played the 8-seed Suns, though the Suns were the 9th ranked defense in the regular season. So like top 10 defense, they've been the best offense. But one of the big shifts for them has been increasing their 3-point rate. And they went from a middle of the pack team in terms of volume to their second right now in the league in terms of 3-point volume, and they've been top 5 in percentage. The Lakers, just to contrast the 3-point battle, have taken the fewest threes in the playoffs, but they are second in percentage. So the Lakers are being more selective with their threes, and they're making a high percentage of them. And we saw that especially games one and games two of the Rocket series. They didn't take a lot of threes, but they made a high percentage of them. So I think that's kind of its own battle within this, but it is interesting to see Houston. I mean, it's adjusting going from saying Houston to OKC with every time we talk about the opponent, but going to OKC and their shift in 3-point rate, I think it's going to be interesting to see like how that materializes with LA's defense. But I actually think to Jason's earlier point, I'm going to disagree here, and I think it's healthy for the show to have some disagreement. I'm actually more confident in the Lakers defense against the Thunder than I am against their offense against the Thunder. I think JJ will come up, like, I think we'll see some similar stuff to what they've thrown at Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves, where it's a lot of just loading up against Shea, right? And I don't think you're going to be able to get away with the doubling that they did against KD, but it's going to be like the head of the snake, primary guy on Shea, and you're going to be basically, you know, two guys at the elbows, two guys in the post area, and you're really going to be trying to shrink the floor, trying to condense the paint. And, you know, Dort, Caruso, Wallace, some of their shaky shooters to beat you. And if they get confidence and they start to, then you adjust to that. But I think the Lakers are going to have a very aggressive game plan. And I think there's some things that they could do against Shea that I think it's like the offensive, I think it's harder to, because it's just, can you like pass the ball against this team? And they've really struggled to do that consistently throughout the regular season and even in the playoffs to some degree. But I think to something that Trevor said earlier, like if you look at, I think it's important sometimes to study a team's profile in losses and some of the trends that you see. So the trends in OKC losses are they still win the turnover possession battle, but it's a smaller margin. So they're turning the ball over a little bit more. Their opponent's turning the ball over a little bit less. They get dominated in the rebounding battle, and they give up a lot of offensive rebounds, and they're getting cleared there. And then you have to shoot a lot of threes against them, as Trevor was talking about earlier. And opponents have increased their 3-point volume and also shot 41% against the Thunder in Thunder losses. So I think as we look at, I'm kind of blending in the offense here, but like the formula to beating this team in terms of at least how they look in losses is like, you got to do a much better job in the possession game, at least relative to the norm against OKC. You have to take care of the ball. You have to force them into slightly more turnovers. You have to dominate the glass. And this is the area where I look at, if I'm looking at like the 3-point battle, the rebounding battle, and the turnover battle, the area I have the most confidence in with the Lakers is the rebounding, actually, because you look at their progress throughout the Houston series. They progressively rebounded the ball better. They won the rebounding battle the last two games of the series. They won the offensive rebounding battle the last three games of the series. And there was a real concerted effort between DA, Rui, LeBron, Jake, Vando, Jackson. Those guys all really did a good job boxing out and corralling offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds. So I think that's going to be a sneaky big part of this was OKC's been offensive rebounding the ball at the second highest rate in the playoffs as well. So that they've actually, there's been a real uptick in that. Their guards are doing a good job of sneaking in and getting offensive rebounds around the free throw line. So I think LA, if they can leverage their size, because they do have a size advantage, at least in spots like 1-3, 1-4 to some degree, that's a way that, like, if you limit the offensive rebounds, you take care of the ball, and then you could get some offensive rebounds on your side. That's where you start to tilt the mark. Because I just think the possession game is like the ultimate thing here, right? Like OKC, if it's like the first round and LA's given up 10 more shots per game, I don't think they have a chance in this series. If they can find a way to keep that margin to like neutral or even like maybe a few more OKC shots, I think they're going to be in this. So to me, the biggest thing is going to be, how do you create the margins? And on the defensive side, a big part of that's going to be like containing Shea, but I think more specifically, can you finish possessions? Because the Lakers have gotten better at that, but it has been an issue at times.
It's always going to be a challenge containing SGA. He's going to be able to get to his spots. He's going to be able to get to his shots when he wants them. For the Lakers, it's about trying to make those shots as difficult as possible, trying to keep him off the free throw line. Of course, that's going to be a challenge. The Thunder may not foul, but I'm sure JJ would admit that the Lakers do. When we talk about those three things, though,
they foul on every possession.
Yeah, foul on every possession. The 3-point shooting, Lakers on the... See, this is why I think that stylistically, Lakers are going to have to really undergo a metamorphosis here. They're, on the season, 3-pointers attempted per game, Lakers ranked 24th. In the NBA, and you got to get threes up against OKC, and you got to shoot them at a high enough rate in order to make up for some of that turnover variance. Turnovers, the Lakers were 17th in the regular season, but dead last in the playoffs in turnover percentage. Then we look at the offensive rebound percentage, which you kind of need to juice your offense a little bit. If you do miss, if you do have some long misses on the increased volume of threes that you're going to have to take, you've got to get yourself extra opportunities, extra scoring chances, and the Lakers were 24th. They're an offensive rebound percentage over the course of the season. So the areas where the Lakers haven't been particularly strong, and this is part of why the Thunder are a 15.5-point favorite going into game one, the Lakers have got to take areas that haven't necessarily been strengths, and they've got to lean into them a bit more and turn them into strengths. I'm not saying they can't do it. They took, again, when Houston shifted their strategy mid-series in round one and went away from attacking the offensive glass, the Lakers said, cool, we're going to dominate on the boards then. And that's exactly what they did. So I won't put it past the Lakers to lean into some of these areas a little bit more, to find some different ways that they can be successful. Will it be enough to actually win the series or give OKC a real run? We'll see. To me, the big thing here is the turnover column, though, at least on the offensive end for the Lakers. Before we move on to the Q&A, Jason, do you have anything that you want to finish up with on the defensive side of the ball?
No, I mean, I should clarify. I agree with Jovan in the sense that, to put it very simply, our the OKC's defense is the best unit in the series by far. So that would be the area where the Lakers will struggle the most. I suppose I should just say, I'm worried we're also not going to be able to get stops. that's what I should say. Like, I'm scared that Shea's going to be able to get to wherever he wants on the floor, and that OKC is going to be able to generate a lot of really high quality shots. That in a way to where, like, even if LeBron does have stretches where he's able to find a little rhythm on offense, or Austin has stretches where he finds a little rhythm on offense, I think it's just going to be really hard for the Lakers to keep up. And that's what specifically scares me. Like, the Thunder are better than the Rockets in almost every way, but there are some specific things where it's like they're not as dumb, for lack of a better word, in the way that they can play really foolish basketball.
That's an appropriate word, honestly, after the series I just watched.
To like waste possessions or botch advantage sequences, go away from something that's working really well. Like, OKC's not like that. And then again, like Houston, there was a certain amount of like, we can dare this guy to shoot and it'll work. That doesn't work against OKC either. Like, they are no longer a dare to shoot team. They will burn you that way. So like, I find myself worrying about that end of the floor as well, is what I meant to say.
You know, with all this that we're talking about, it sounds all doom and gloom, you know, and there is a flip side to this. And we talked about a little bit going into the Rocket series. No, I mean, nobody expected the Lakers to win the Rocket series. Nobody did, right? I mean, I guess Mark Spears picked the Lakers to win the Rocket. Maybe that was the only one I saw.
He changed his pick.
Oh, did boo.
He changed it? Okay.
Andre Snellings. Shout out Andre Snellings.
There we go.
Not only did he pick the Lakers over the Rockets, he picked the Timberwolves over the Spurs. Over the Nuggets. He was the only one who got those two series right.
Wow. I think KOC picked the Lakers too, if I remember correctly.
I'm just saying with the ESPN panel, because that's been going viral. Yeah. People are screenshotting it because everybody else picked the Rockets and the Nuggets.
The point is that the Lakers are going into this, to a degree, kind of playing with house money. They got their big upset win over Houston, the win that nobody thought. And people will push back on upset. Get out of here. It's absolutely an upset. It was one of the biggest upsets of the last 40 years of the NBA playoffs. I believe it's 13th when you look at the betting odds going into the series. It was absolutely an upset win for the Los Angeles Lakers. It was a phenomenal feel-good win. It may not be that kind of a series here against OKC. Everything that we've gotten into said that OKC should not have a problem. There's a reason why they're a 15.5-point favorite, but that also means that the Lakers get to go into this series, play loose, play free, go out there. If they don't win, no one is expecting them to win. If they win a game, everybody's going to be looking at the Thunder. What the hell did you do wrong that you lost this game to the Lakers, who don't even have Luka Doncic right now? So there is that element of this too, where the Lakers can go into this series, and if they need to shoot a bunch of threes, they need to shoot a bunch of threes. And if the shots don't go in, well, they don't have much of a chance if they don't start getting up those kinds of looks anyway. So I think there is a little bit of a freedom that comes into a series by being the heavy underdog. I'm not expecting that to carry them through, but again, no one is expecting the Lakers to go in there and win this series. I think the Lakers have already accomplished something, getting through round one, getting through the Houston Rockets, and now you're going into a series against OKC where you win a couple of games, you push the Thunder at all, and that will be, I think, a positive for LA.
I think this is a big series for me, like just taking a step back and looking at the big picture. Regardless of what happens in the series, I think it is going to inform us about the direction of the Lakers, the future of the Lakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, one, this is like the ultimate measuring stick series, right? Like if you win the series, then I think if the Lakers win this series, they could very well win the championship, if not should be favored to win the championship, because this is the toughest team remaining in the field right now, right? Like if you beat OKC, you can look at San Antonio and say, we should beat this team in the conference finals. You can look at whoever comes out of the East and say, we should beat that team, right? You slay this dragon, like this is the biggest dragon remaining. But then two, it also shows you like how does Austin fare? Does Austin fare much better than he did in the regular season? And that lets you calibrate where you truly feel about him as a potential number two or a potential number three, how you feel about that contract. How does DeAndre Ayton fare? DeAndre Ayton, as Jason said earlier, played really poorly in this series. Isaiah Hartenstein kicked his butt in all four games, and or three of the four, whatever. And you know, he was single digit scoring all four games. Had one game with double digit rebounds, couldn't catch the ball, couldn't get post position, really struggled. But he's coming off of a high mark, high water performance against the Rockets. So like, can he translate that momentum? Guys like Rui and Luke, I think the Lakers are still trying to figure out like who fits in our future? What do they look like? Marcus is coming off a great series against the Rockets. And so I think there's a lot we will learn about the role players, the supporting cast, who fits, who doesn't, how much you like, where you slot them. Are they a starter? Are they a bench player? Do you want to give them X amount of money or Y amount of money? So I think this is like just a really nice test for the Lakers of like this team, regardless of the result of the series, OKC is not going anywhere. They are loaded with young talent and picks, and they're going to be around for the next half decade at least. So as the Lakers build around Luka for the next half decade plus, it needs to be to some degree like, how do we compete with this team specifically that at least up to this point in the season has given us a lot of problems? So I think this is going to be just a really important series for LA to learn about itself, how they stack, like throughout the regular season. It's now how you stack up with OKC in a playoff series, right? Like difference between the 82 game season and a 16 game season. So you learn about where you stack up and then where each individual stacks up in the rotation. And I think if nothing else, like that to me is going to be really important in how LA shapes its roster this summer.
All right. Great stuff there. We're going to get right back to our question and answer section of the show in just 1 minute. Don't go anywhere.
All right. Before we keep going, quick shout out to Cozy Earth for sponsoring today's show. And I'll be real. This one actually fits perfectly with what we do because we're on here grinding, talking hoops, reacting to games. But when you finally get that downtime, you want to be comfortable. And that's where Cozy Earth comes in. They've got robes and slippers that are built for those quiet moments, like after a long day or just kicking back and watching a game like this. And with Mother's Day coming up, it's actually a really good gift idea because it's not just like a random gift. It's something that she's actually going to use every day. Their robes are super soft. They've got different styles. And the slippers are built to be worn all day, not just around the house for 5 minutes. It's just one of those things that feels premium right away. And the best part, you can try it risk-free. They've got a 100-night trial and a 10-year warranty. So you're not really taking a risk here. So if you're looking for something thoughtful this year for Mother's Day, go to CozyEarth.com and use code HMA for 20% off. And if there's a survey after checkout, just let them know that you came from our show. Because at the end of the day, home starts with mom.
All right. Let's get into the question and answer portion. We did have a few super chats that came in before the show started. We got one here from LeBronky. He said, for me, this is more of a LeBron series than a Luka series, because LeBron is such a handful in the post. Guys, we kind of talked about that already, about, I believe it was Jovan, we talked about LeBron in the post, and that needed to be something that the Lakers really focused on offensively. I don't think that means they won't miss Luka in this series, but that should be, as Jovan was saying, an entry point to the Lakers offense.
To be honest, like even if Luka, like let's say Luka did come back for like game three, which by the way, isn't until Saturday. That's why I thought like Saturday's like a legit 5 weeks post-injury, 5 weeks in a day or something like that. Like that's right around the same time frame that you've seen the several guys come back from grade two hamstring strains. And I think if they go down 0-2 and just get their ass beat, then you probably don't see them. But like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to see Luka return mid-series. Even then, like we saw Luka was one of the primary culprits for their issues offensively against the Thunder because he was spamming ball screens, struggling to handle the blitzes and at the level coverages, and struggling to get the ball up the floor. So like, even if Luka returned, I think an easy way to kind of make things easier on his hamstring and to find match of like more favorable entry points for him would be to have Luka post up if he came back to the series. So like, I think this needs to be a post up heavy series all around for the Lakers, regardless of whether or not Luka comes back.
All right, we've got Jordan says, this series, more than the last, will really tell us who we need to keep moving forward into the next iteration of the Lakers. We can't run it back. Well, I mean, they do have a lot of flexibility coming up this summer. They are second in the NBA in projected salary cap space. We'll see. There's a lot of variables in there, but somewhere just shy of $50 million is what we're expecting, and there's a lot that they're going to have to do. They've got a number of guys who are free agents, including Rui Hachimura, including Luke Kennard, Austin Reeves, that LeBron James guy. There's a lot to figure out. Does Marcus Smart pick up his player option? What about DeAndre Ayton? Tons of variables in there. But ultimately, yeah, this will be a really important measuring stick series for the Lakers as they figure out what exactly the next iteration of the team is going to look like. And this would also be, that's not just a Lakers thing. This is any team taking on the Thunder is looking at this as, hey, this is the level we're going to need to get to, and this will help inform our decision-making here moving forward.
Agreed.
The one thing I specifically wanted to add was just Rui. Like, I think to the point you were making throughout the show today, Trevor, about how OKC concedes threes. Like, if Rui was an unreliable three-point shooter in this series, I would take that as a pretty big red flag. And now he's the best three-point shooter in the history of the league in terms of playoff three-point shooting by percentage. But just OKC is a very unique challenge. And with the way OKC guards, we're going to need guys that can shoot under duress.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I do think in this series, Rui is going to have to be not crazy shooting threes, aggressive, but slightly more aggressive. He tends to, if there is a threat of a closeout, he wants to put the ball on the floor and get to the 15-foot pull-up, which he is masterful at that shot. But I think you're going to need a hot shooting performance from Rui from three in order to potentially win some games here. And that's going to mean him being a little bit more aggressive and going ahead and firing that shot up, even if there is a threat of, or at least, or even a little bit of a closeout coming to him.
To that point, in rewatching the season series, I did notice when they slotted Chet on Rui, that's when you saw him be a little bit more passive with, like, it's different when you have the 7 foot one guy closing out with the long arms, and whether it was him passing up those open or semi-open corner threes, or like even him racking the closeout and then trying to see if he could like rise up over Chet. He was a little tentative there. I think similarly, you saw that in the Houston series when they'd slot Jabari Smith on him, and Jabari Smith isn't as tall or as long. Like Rui still was able to score on him a couple times, but you're just, I think he definitely looked more comfortable when he had like Reed Shepard on him or a smaller Rocket. So I think this is going to be a series for Rui and Luke as like not only the two like best shooters on the team, but two of the best shooters in the league, two of the top 10 shooters in the NBA, just period. They need to let it fly. Like I think we just talked about Rui. Luke cannot have the performances he had games three through game three. He was fine, but like games four through six in the Rocket series, Luke has to play with far more confidence and aggression. It's got to be, I'd even rather see him shoot in like the mid 30s on a higher volume than him be like, I'm going to shoot 50% on two threes a game, right? Like he's got to let that fly. So I think those two guys in particular are going to be bellwethers for LA's offense.
Totally agree.
Michael said, I finally got it. It's Trevor. It's like a party. Lane, Jovan, Yo-Yo, Buha, and Jason. I was texting with Jackson about this earlier, Timp.
That's better than what did someone say?
What
something
was
like
it before?
It was like so or something. So like a random word that I don't right. know.
I feel like when you talk for a living, you're going to repeat yourself a lot.
You're gonna, yeah. That's what we do.
Apparently, I use the word exactly a lot. I've heard that.
Exactly.
I use verve and I cut it out of my vocabulary, but I'll bring it back.
Teddy Hart said, so either Harden wins a ring, SGA repeats, Braun gets his fifth, Embiid redeems the process, the Knicks break the 53-year curse, Ant gets Minnesota their first championship since the Lakers days, or Wemby is crowned in season three. Which is the most meaningful of those things?
I'm between LeBron
getting... I find
LeBron
myself kind of rooting for Embiid a little bit.
I was from like a impact standpoint, I think it's either LeBron getting his fifth or the Knicks breaking their curse, because the Knicks, I mean, they're like the NBA glamour franchise that just doesn't have the rings or like the championship history. Like I feel like they're not on the Lakers or Celtics level, but they're right there. But even a franchise like Philly has multiple rings and has won more recently than the Knicks. So it's like, I think the Knicks breaking the curse would be just for like basketball discourse would be a really big moment. But also, I mean, LeBron getting his fifth, like, I mean, you can make a case for any of these. I think they all have a strong Harden getting his first and slaying some of his demons in the playoffs. You know, if SGA goes back to back, that elevates him to a different class. Embiid, this would be like the redemptive arc that alters his career. Wemby winning in year three, now he's at a different level. Ant, like, so yeah, I mean, it could go any way here, but I think LeBron and the Knicks are like the two ones that would probably get the most attention.
Yeah, I think especially when you're the favorite to do it, like with SGA, like right now the Thunder are the favorite to win the whole thing. It's not quite as weighty as when you've got a 41-year-old LeBron going and winning a championship. Like that would mean a ton, especially if you had to go through the Thunder, go through the Spurs in order to make that happen. Then, you know, maybe it's the Knicks or the Cavs or whoever it is, the Pistons that's sitting when the dust settles. I think it would obviously mean a lot for LeBron to get that done. For the Knicks, I mean, they put it all on the line, right? Right. And now they've got the extra motivation because when they look up, they don't see an NBA Cup banner that definitely would have stopped them. They wouldn't have had nearly as much motivation to go win a championship had they hung that thing up. So we'll see if they're proven right in that decision there. Senpai said small ball is the way. Rui at the five with Luke in Ayton's place. Let whoever Shea, Chet are guarding bring the ball up. Braun work in the post. With five out.
I think the defense would be pretty rough with Luke and Austin on the floor with no center.
Yeah, you're relying on Rui a lot to be your rim. I mean, you're leaning all into offense, basically, with no rim protection there. Not that Ayton is the best rim protector in the NBA, but also when we talk about the teams that have beat OKC in the past, the three-point volume may be there with a grouping like this, but the offensive rebounding certainly wouldn't be.
Yeah, my fear here is I just think Shea would have a layup line. I don't know if you're going maybe a little bit of zone and trying to muck it up that way, but I think if you're just going straight small ball switching everything, I think Shea is going to cook that.
SGA, AJ, rim pressure, the biggest problem for the defense. It's a problem. For sure.
I would say like paint touches are like, and this is, you know, it's a sibling of this point, but I just think those two are going to be the heads of the snake, especially if J-Dub is out. And I thought Shea looked pretty comfortable penetrating the initial line of the Lakers defense. And then that leading to spray out threes or cuts or just getting LA in the blender. So AJ Mitchell also, he was in my series preview, he's my X factor on the Thunder side of just, this is like his first real moment in the playoffs. He's a second year guy, wasn't in their primary rotation last postseason, obviously played a big role in their win over the Suns, but I think it's different second round Lakers, LeBron, like all the attention and spotlight that's going to come with this. It's a big moment for him that we'll see what he's made of and if he can be like that number two ball handler playmaker for OKC, at least while J-Dub's out.
Let's go here. Win or lose, this is a big series for Austin Reeves. Don't see how you can expect to contend in the Luka era if big money goes to players that wilt against contenders. Guys, I cannot wait for any time Austin turns the ball over or misses a shot or does anything that might be remotely wrong for that to be a complete indictment of whatever his next contract is going to be. That's going to be a good time. But I do think it's true that it is a big series for him. I thought he was pretty good against Houston coming back from injury, particularly in that third quarter in game six. He was getting to the rim pretty much at will. Didn't shoot the ball very well in the two games in the series. But if Austin struggles, he turns the ball over a bunch. It'll be a bit of more evidence that he's going to struggle come playoff time against the hyper athletic teams. If he's able to find success as he has done against some athletic teams, not all, then that'll be, I think, a feather in his cap. I guess let's go to this way. This is kind of along the same line here. What is it that you're expecting out of Austin? Like, what would success look like for Austin Reeves in this series?
I'm going to cut Austin's some slack in the sense that he's still just coming back from this injury. He's always been such a rhythm player, and he's basically going to be the head of the snake in terms of perimeter initiation in this matchup, which is not really his ideal role anyway. It's ideally Lou Dort. Lou Dort, I think, is going to guard LeBron. He's going to see Case and Wallace anyway, but it's more just in terms of the way that OKC can load up on him in terms of the super high usage compared to what it would look like if he was playing off of Luka. and he could pick his spots more and target when the defense has shifted more and things along those lines. So I'm going to cut him some slack. The one thing I think that I would be really disappointed in is if he just continued to turn the ball over every time.
Yeah,
that would be the one thing where I'm like, yo, dude, like, you've got to figure this out. But like, I don't expect him to come out there and shoot 50% on jump shots after not barely playing in the last month. I don't expect him to go out there and average an efficient 37, because that's not really the type. Like, you said, do you guys see that thing where like no one scored 40 on the Thunder since LeBron did, like, 2 years ago with or 2.5 years ago with Anthony Davis? Like, no one really lights up this defense. So I'm gonna cut Austin a lot of slack. I just want to see him take care of the basketball.
I would like to see, to Jason's point, maybe not 50% shooting on jumpers, but I would like to see. I mean, I think some of the stuff with Austin in the playoffs has been a little overblown. And yeah, I don't want to relitigate that, but I think one of the things you can fairly knock him for has been the two previous postseasons in 2024, that first round series against Denver, he shot 27% on threes. Last postseason against Minnesota, was dealing with the toe thing, but he played through it. So I feel like if you're out there, you got to judge the player for their performance, especially in the playoffs. Shot 32%. Right now, shooting 17% on threes through the first couple of games. Obviously, I think he's like 2-for-12, had a rough start to the series from a shot-making, like, jumper perspective. But that would be my only thing, because I think there is something to it. Has felt like he has progressively worn down physically throughout the course of these seasons, and whether he's injured or he's like secretly playing through an injury or whatever, like, I know those have been factors to close seasons, but that also is something you have to calculate and factor in when we're talking about paying a player a certain amount of money or factoring in a player as like a long-term piece. So I would just like to see, like, all right, he's gotten over the injury, he came back early. I think it's commendable, as we said, after he returned from the injury. But now it's like, can you, to Jason's point, like, not turn the ball over, average nearly 5 turnovers a game against this team and more turnovers than assists? And can you shoot? Can you get to at least league average from threes and not have a third straight postseason being a below league average 3-point shooter? I think that's a big thing, because ultimately, like we saw, remember one of the things that happened in the Minnesota series was Austin shifted dramatically off of the ball. And at that point, he was more the number three than the number two. But 60% of Austin's shots in the Minnesota series were catch and shoot threes. And I don't know if it'll necessarily be that high moving forward with Luka, but it is going to be a Luka-centric offense. It is going to be funneling the ball through Luka longer term. And Austin's going to need to be able to shoot average at a minimum, but ideally above league average as a catch and shoot guy in a playoff situation. So if he can't do that, I think that does, for me, raise some questions about his fit as a catch and shoot guy.
And I think a lot of people hone in on the, well, that's not a max player. Yeah, I think the Lakers should be doing everything they can to try to not give him a max contract. I've harped on the fact that it's not going to change their spending power this summer, assuming they go the below the cap route anyway. But that doesn't mean you should just give him we can give you max money and still spend this summer, so here's max money. I think they've got to try to get the best value deal they possibly can, and that's going to certainly matter moving forward. And we've seen that the way things have operated under the CBA of the last few years. But in terms of what I want to see on the court from Austin Reaves, there's really two big things. And Jason already touched upon it, the turnovers. That doesn't mean he's never going to turn the ball over. You're playing against the best team in the NBA at forcing turnovers, but I don't want to see 4+ turnovers a night. You've got to do a good job taking care of the basketball. And then defensively, there's a play I remember vividly from the last time he played against OKC, where Cason Wallace had the ball in semi-transition. Austin was between him and the basket and just bullied Austin into the paint and scored over him. He's got to hold up defensively. And I thought he did a very nice job when Amen Thompson tried to attack him last series. We're not talking about never getting scored on. That's not even the best defenders in the NBA are going to get scored on at times. But he also did a really nice job digging down defensively, slapping the ball away from Thompson, blocking him on the way up. I need to see that kind of a fight out of Austin.
Hit 3 blocks. Yeah. And some nice rotations offensively, yeah.
Yeah.
So we need to see more of that in this one. That's what I'm looking for on both sides of the ball. The shooting, their shot variance. If he has a hot shooting night, I'm not going to overreact. If he has a poor shooting night, I'm not going to overreact to that too much. It's more you got to hang on to the basketball. Don't turn it over if you want to be a primary ball handler in this league. And then the defensive thing, he's got to at least be able to hold up there. He will get scored on at times. There are times where he's going to get cooked, but he's also got to have his moments where he gets stops as well. Let's go here. Excited for this series. Hope we got to be a great half court team. No careless turnovers, great on defending. And truthfully, we got a flop as well. Jaylen Brown may hate that idea, but you know that you've got to show the referees that the contact is there. You know the Thunder get a certain kind of whistle. It's not even so much the whistle they get. It's the calls that aren't made against them. The Lakers may need to show the officials where the contact is. That doesn't mean they should be flying all over the court and embarrassing themselves or anything like that. But they need to make sure that the officials see the contact that the Thunder are just constantly making all game long.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an area they'll really miss Luka. Like, I think there, yeah. I mean, there are many areas they will miss Luka, but in this series in particular, with how much pressure OKC can put on your defense in terms of foul trouble, getting to the free throw line, Luka can match that, right? Almost single-handedly, but especially in conjunction with Austin, like those are two of the best foul drawers in the league in the regular season. And Luka's been doing that for years. And then also there is an element of just shot making that like sometimes the best defense against OKC is you got a guy or two draped on you and you just hit a step back three in their face. Like it's that type of defense where they are going to really wall off the paint. And sometimes it just needs to be better shot making, and Luka is the best on the team at that. So that's something that does stand out though. Like the foul, like flopping, we can joke about that, but in reality, sure. I think there is something too. Like if you can get Lu Dort in foul trouble, if you can get Alex Caruso or Kayson Wallace in foul trouble, that does impact their rotation.
By the way, guys, I don't know if you saw this. We got a little bit of news that just came through. Anthony Edwards is playing tonight.
Wow.
Pulling Giannis 2021.
Crazy.
What a beast.
Crazy.
Well, if they get a health, like, well, I mean, he's not going to be 100%, but if they get like an 80% Ant and he progresses through into like game two, game three, gets close to 100%, they could win that series.
I think that series is going to be a lot closer than people think. I saw a lot of books had San Antonio like 20-1. I think that was crazy. Like I think the Wolves are going to keep that thing pretty close and competitive.
How did you guys feel about Tari Eason's Laker tryout?
I'd pay him $15 million, $20 million maybe.
But don't the Rockets match that?
Exactly. So yeah, I don't really have him as a realistic target.
I agree. I agree. Yeah. He did well defensively against LeBron. He had some good moments, but
I don't think he's close to being worth the type of paycheck that you pay like a Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah.
No. I mean, if it's under 20, I entertain it. I would prefer it in that like 15, 16 range. I would maybe go up to like 18, depending on what your options are. But I do view him coming out of that series. I view him as a high level bench player / low end starter, but for the Lakers, I think you're trying to find ideally that like perimeter guy who fits next to Luka and Austin in the long run. And I don't know if he's quite up to that level.
Speaking of Luka, did you see Luka's movement video today? Seems better. I did. I have not seen that. Did you see it, Jovan?
Yeah, I mean, I've been keeping up with the practice updates. They were practicing as we were going. Just moving around, shooting threes. JJ said there's no update. Now, they did say the same thing with Austin, and then all of a sudden, but Austin had at least progressed to the one-on-ones, which is like the next checkpoint here is for Luka. It's going to be, when does he start the one-on-ones? Then he ramps up to three-on-three and then scrimmaging. So Jason mentioned it earlier. It feels like game four is probably the earliest he could come back, which is directly a week from now, but he would have to start doing that one-on-one stuff within the next couple of days. And I'm curious to see if he travels with the team, because I would almost just say like I know there's a morale aspect, but like if he is really trying to come back, like it might be better to just stay in LA and get some private work in, and maybe they can bring up some of the South Bay guys to practice with him and stuff, but we'll be curious to see if he travels with it. I mean, I'm going to assume he travels with the team, but I would say it might be better if he just stays and gets work in to try and return by game four.
How much does the where the series sits, how much does that matter in whether or not you bring Luka back?
I think if it's 1-1, you try to bring him back.
I mean, if it's game four, if you're down 3-0, like I don't think at that point it makes much sense. If it's 2-1, depending on how you're feeling about that, like, I mean, obviously if you're up, then I think you bring him back.
For sure.
I would still like, this is not Houston where like with Austin, they were like, oh, we're up 3-0. We can maybe stretch this out a little bit. I think with OKC, like you have to go for the kill as early as possible. So if LA is up 2-1 going into game four, if Luka is physically capable of playing and there's not like a major injury re-aggravation risk, like I think you throw him out there. But yeah, I mean, I think anything other than if it's 2-0 or 3-0 and it's like game three or game four, I don't think you bring him back at that point.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do a couple more here. What about a Rui sign and trade for Reece Hoshea?
No.
No.
Yeah, I would just keep Rui, especially considering they've probably
got benched in the series. Like I don't even think he's like necessarily an every night rotation guy right now.
He's a good athlete. He runs the floor well, but there's not a whole lot else that he brings to the table.
And let's go with this one. Rosemary said, how much has changed in y'all's lives since the Lakers last won a playoff series? Since the Lakers last won a playoff
series. So this will be 2023.
Right.
Quite a bit. I live in Colorado now.
I started doing this. I didn't have a podcast or a show in 2023.
Oh, yeah. So, you were a writer. You're an old school writer.
I changed jobs. I've moved a couple times. A lot has changed.
Definitely a lot different. I mean, this show didn't exist. Basketball Bulletin didn't exist. There were a lot of things that have certainly changed quite a bit since the Lakers won a playoff series. Should the Lakers run more drives into assists? I mean, ideally, paint touches
driving
into threes
kick,
would be the ideal, the driving kick. The challenge is getting that initial drive and breaking that perimeter defense from the Thunder.
And no to the last one. Especially, you got the Austin Hart profile picture. How are you trading Austin for Şengün? I mean, like, to me, Şengün, in all seriousness, he's kind of... people like they throw out the baby Jokic comparison, which I think is a stretch, but to me he's more of Sabonis and like really good player, all-star level player, might even make third team All-NBA depending on how the voting shakes out, or eventually make a third team All-NBA at some point in his career. I just think when you have a center, like I think the difference between Jokic and Sabonis and Şengün is like, to make up for Jokic's limitations defensively, you basically have to be one of the best offensive players of all time. If you're not at that level or close to that, I mean, we saw it in the series against Minnesota, but like for Sabonis and Şengün, it's like they give you, I think they're even worse than Jokic's defensively, but they give you all the same problems of Jokic, but they don't give you the same high ceiling of Jokic. So that's where with Şengün, it's just so difficult, I think, to build a championship roster with him being one of your two best players. Like maybe if he's your number three and you have the right four next to him and you have a bunch of athletes, which Houston's trying to build that type of team, like it can work. But we saw the Lakers just, he was food in this series. Didn't matter who was going up against him. Like he got cooked.
I think they should trade him for Giannis.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that if you're talking about trade Şengün for Giannis, if you're Houston.
Yeah, I would trade Şengün and Jabari Smith, and I'd run it out there with KD and Giannis and Fred VanVleet and Amen Thompson and
Steven Adams.
Yeah, Steven Adams and
Clint Capella.
And Clint Capella. All right, everybody. We got shout out late night gang here. There's one for you.
Yes, sir. Shout out late night gang. Merch is live.
All right, everybody. We will wrap things up there. We've got game one coming up tomorrow. Excited for that one. Guys, when are we going? Are we going Wednesday after game one?
I think we should go after game one. Yeah.
Okay. Let's do Wednesday.
Let's do that then.
Yeah, that's gonna be the, it's always after game one you have the most passionate initial opinions.
We'll have some overreactions in either direction.
It'll be a good time. So 11 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesday. That'll be our next show. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out. If you haven't done so yet, please make sure you hit the subscribe button. Guys, as always, this was awesome. And I hope we've got more super fun things to talk about on Wednesday.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? Good to see you guys. I'll see you on Wednesday.
Thanks, everybody. See ya. Stay safe.